Two vain, prickly, strutting loudmouths hurling colourful threats at each other. That's how The Economist magazine recently described US President Donald Trump and North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un. And your next guest fears that temperament on both sides is one of the greatest threats in the standoff over Pyongyang's burgeoning nuclear and missile capacity. Stanford University's Professor Scott Sagan is one of the world's preeminent authorities on the politics of disarmament and deterrence. He's in Australia to deliver a major lecture at the Australian National University. We spoke earlier. Professor, thank you very much for joining us on The World Today. Donald Trump said in Seoul yesterday that North Korea could be on the path to a better future if it agrees to complete, verifiable and total denuclearization. Is that goal achievable?
I think over the very long term it might be, but President Trump said that this was the first step towards recognition and a better future is total nuclear disarmament. And I think that's not at all going to happen. North Korea has worked hard to acquire this capability precisely because they're afraid that the United States might attack them. And there's no guarantee that the United States can give that I think would convince the North Koreans that they don't need their deterrent.
And so where do we go with this? Your colleague from Stanford, Michael Oslin, said yesterday, look, forget about denuclearization. It's time to talk to the North Koreans about helping to secure their nuclear arsenal. Is that a realistic proposition?
Yes. I think that would be a wise thing to do. It's not clear that the Trump administration is moving in that direction quite yet. I thought that the Trump speech in Seoul was mixed. On the one hand, he did underline the deterrent threat of retaliation, which is good. He said that we will defend our common security, our shared prosperity, our sacred liberty. We will not permit America or our allies to be blackmailed or attacked. On the other hand, he did rather recklessly, in my view, hint at preventive war. He said, we will not allow American cities to be threatened with destruction. Well, that's suggesting that he's going to attack or potentially attack the deterrent. He said, we cannot tolerate the menace of a rogue regime that threatens with nuclear devastation. But that, again, is a suggestion that we can't live with deterrence. And this is what I think the administration has really failed, is to acknowledge that our efforts to denuclearize North Korea can be a long-term goal, but it's not going to happen anytime soon. And we need to stop threatening them with the kinds of rhetoric and the potential exercises that we've been having so far.
So is the biggest risk here actually temperament, the temperament of the U.S. president?
I think it's both the temperament of the U.S. president and the temperament of Kim Jong-un. Back in the Cold War, we had adversaries who were ruthless, often rational, but ruthless. Today we have both a President of the United States who's ruthless and rational, and Kim Jong-un who's ruthless and rational, but both of them can sometimes behave in an impetuous manner. And it's really a concern that the rhetoric of the administration has been heightened to the point that Kim Jong-un has to be worried that there's going to be an attack against him. And when he is worried about there being an attack against him, that leads to him having preemptive options. And for him to look at for signals that the United States is about to attack, and if that's the case, he's going to try to launch first. We need to get off of this rhetoric of escalation and move towards a calmer position where we can talk to the North Koreans, accept that they have nuclear weapons for at least the intermediate term, and try to have arms control and risk reduction, not recklessness.
There are examples in history where countries have given up nuclear weapons. South Africa, Brazil, Argentina, Ukraine, Kazakhstan, Belarus. You would describe those countries at that time in various ways, I think. But are there lessons from those experiences that help us to think through how we might approach North Korea in a long-term rational way?
I think not. The South Africans got rid of their nuclear weapons because of a major regime change that was happening. And the apartheid government did not want to have nuclear weapons around during the period that they feared might be a very tense, not particularly stable transition to black majority rule. So that was a voluntary action. The South Africans also did not face at that point a major threat of an invasion. The North Koreans do. So I think that the potential for unilateral disarmament on the North side is exceedingly low. What we can expect over time is that the North Koreans, if they begin to feel secure in their deterrent capabilities, can relax. They can say, okay, the United States is not going to attack, and that we should try to encourage that belief rather than discourage it.
And thinking about the U.S. side, we've heard information given from the Pentagon to Congress this week outlining just how dreadful a ground war on the Korean Peninsula would be. Does the American public perhaps understand that? Are they perhaps a restraint on excesses of this president?
I'm afraid the U.S. public is not. Recent research that Benjamin Valentino and I have conducted shows that the majority of American people would be willing to use nuclear weapons in many different scenarios. That is, there is not a deep taboo against nuclear weapons among the American public. That's unfortunate, deeply unfortunate. But what we do have is a constraint by the U.S. military. As you suggested, the U.S. military is telling Congress, and I hope they're also telling the president, that any war in Korea would be a disaster. We might win, in quotes, in the sense that Kim Jong-un would be destroyed, but it would be the most devastating war since the Second World War. The American public needs to understand that. The president needs to understand that. And hopefully Kim Jong-un needs to understand that.
Professor Sagan, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Professor Scott Sagan from Stanford University, currently visiting Australia.